As a person, as well as a pastor, I've encountered things in life I simply do not understand. You ever had that happen? Ever have an event in your life and you scratched your head and thought, given all that I know about the Lord and about His Word, I just don't understand how that could happen. I've looked at the way people respond to situations and scratched my head and said, what makes them do that? I just don't understand. It even happens when you think, so well, they're spiritual. Why would, if they're spiritual, they do a thing like that? And I scratch my head again. I sometimes think if I were just smart enough, I would understand some of these situations. Maybe if I had the wisdom of Solomon, then I would know. Now, what is interesting about that is that Solomon, who was the one that asked the Lord for wisdom and God gave it to him, perhaps the wisest man not only of his day but every day since, has written extensively on the subject of wisdom. He wrote a whole book we call Proverbs that is about wisdom. But he said some other things as well. And in one of those passages where he wrote about wisdom, he told us about the limitation of wisdom, as well as some of its benefits. So I think it might be helpful for us to understand that wisdom, even if you had the wisdom of Solomon, has some limitations. This might help us face some of those questions that we wrestle with and struggle with and don't understand. So with that in mind, would you join me in Ecclesiastes chapter 8? Ecclesiastes chapter 8. Now, this is a fairly long passage of Scripture, and basically it's divided into two parts. In the first part of the passage, which includes the first nine verses, he talks about one of the benefits of wisdom. Then beginning in verse 10 and going to the end of the chapter, he talks about a boundary to limitation. It's about a boundary to wisdom, I should say. It's limitation. So he starts out in verse 1 by saying, who is a wise man? So he begins by talking about somebody that has some wisdom and some of the benefits that go with that. So I'm going to start there and move through the passage. So let's begin with verse 1. Who is a wise man? Who knows the interpretation of a thing? A man's wisdom makes his face smile, and the sternness of his face is changed. I say, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Do not hasten to go from his presence. Do not take your stand from an evil thing, for he does whatever pleases him. Where the word of the king, there is power. And who may say to him, what are you doing? He who keeps his commandment will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man, some wise man's heart, discerns both time and judgment. Because for every matter there is a time and a judgment, though the misery of the man increases greatly. For he does not know what will happen, so who can tell when it will occur? No one has power over the spirit to retrain the spirit. No one has power in the day of death. There is no release from that war, and the wicked will not be delivered from those who are given to it. All this I have seen and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Now, this part of the passage is talking about the benefits, or at least one major benefit, of wisdom. So let me go back and cover that, and then I want to talk about the boundary, the limitation of wisdom. So let's start with the benefit. He says in verse 1, who is the wise man? who knows the interpretation of a thing. Now, if you recall, back in chapter 7, he talked about the fact that he didn't know everything. Look at chapter 7, verse 23. All this I have proven by wisdom, and I said, I will be wise, but it was far from me. So even Solomon says, I didn't know everything, couldn't figure everything out. So now he says, well, who is the wise man? Who is the one who interprets a thing? And what he means by verse 1 is, who is able to interpret every situation? And he immediately, in verse 2, introduces being before a king. So the kind of situation he has in mind is this. I'm standing before the king, and who is the wise man? Now, he is the king, so he knows about this area. And he says, who's wise when they're standing before a king? If you are, here is what wisdom will do for you. If you understand that situation, that's the point. Then he says in verse 1, a man's wisdom makes his face shine, and the sternness of his face is changed. So here's the situation based on the context of this verse. You're standing before the king, somebody in authority. Let's say we don't have kings. Let's say your boss. And you're not sure what to do in that situation. And so there's a frown on your face, a wrinkled brow. Well, if you have wisdom, if you understand that situation, if you know what to do, then the stern expression on your face is changed to a smile. In that situation, if you have wisdom, you just smile. I know exactly what to do in this situation. That can't help but bring a smile to your face. So, one of the benefits of wisdom is when you're dealing with somebody in authority, if you understand that situation, it will produce a smile. Somebody has said, the face is the signature of the soul. What's going on in your soul will express itself on your face. And so if you really have wisdom, Solomon is saying, there'll be a smile on your face. But there are other benefits to this particular situation. The overall situation in all 9 verses is you're standing before somebody in authority. Now here's what he says in verse 2. I say, here's wisdom, before authority, keep the king's commandment for the sake of your oath to God. Now what he's saying is this, if you have wisdom and you're standing before the king, that'll not only produce a smile on your face, it'll prompt you to be obedient. And the reason that you should be obedient is that's the oath you took when supposedly you had an office to serve the king. Something similar to that is said in 1 Peter chapter 2, where Peter says, submit yourselves to every ordinance of man for the Lord's sake. So those who know the Lord are commanded by the Lord to submit to those who are in authority. Solomon says, that's just plain smart. Now, you don't have to have the wisdom of Solomon to figure this out. I mean, if you got a boss and you're standing before him, it's smart to submit to the boss, right? And it's stupid, if I may be so blunt, to not do that. So, wisdom prompts you to be obedient. There's more. Look at verse 3. Do not be hasty to go from his presence. Don't be quick to resign your position. Do not take your stand for an evil thing. And don't be quick to revolt. So don't be quick to resign, and don't be quick to revolt against the king. And here's the reason. Verse 3. For he does whatsoever pleases him. Now, in Solomon's day, the king was an absolute monarch and could do anything he wanted. And in many situations today, that happens when you have a boss. The boss has the power. So he says in verse 4, where the word of the king is, there is power. When you're standing before the boss has the power. And he may say to him, what are you doing? Remember, he has the power. He who keeps his command will experience nothing harmful. So what he's saying here is, first of all, if you're wise, it'll promote you not resigning or revolting. You won't participate in the rebellion. You'll be loyal, in other words. And then he indicates in verse 5, nothing harmful will come to you. He says that very plainly. He who keeps his command, that is the command of the king, will experience nothing harmful. And a wise man's heart discerns both time and judgment, because for every matter there is a time and judgment. Now this goes back to verse 1, where he says, who knows the interpretation of a thing? And so now he's saying, if you have wisdom and you understand the situation, that you're standing before somebody who has the power over you, can do whatsoever he pleases, then wisdom will put a smile on your face. It'll prompt you to be obedient. It'll promote you being loyal, and it'll prevent you from being harmed, because you will discern the difference between what you should and should not do. In the latter part of verse 6, he says, though the misery of a man increases greatly, and the word translated misery in verse 6 is the same one translated harmful in verse 5. So he's saying, if you don't understand this, then you only increase the harm that will come to you. Verse 7, he who does not know what will happen, so who can tell when it will occur? In other words, if you don't understand the situation, if you don't use wisdom in that situation, then how do you know what's going to happen? And he lists some possibilities. Verse 8, no one has power over the spirit to retain the spirit. And actually, this is the word wind. You can no more control what's going to happen when you're standing before a boss, especially an absolute monarch like a king, than you can control the wind. And no one has power in the day of his death. You don't have power over the day you're going to die. There is no release from the war, and the wicked will not be delivered, those who are given to it. You do wickedly, and you will no more be delivered from the consequences of the king than you can control the wind, the day of your death, or a war that is beyond you. So Solomon says, all this I have seen, and applied my heart to every work that is done under the sun. There is a time in which one man rules over another to his own hurt. Now, there's a lot going on here, but in very simple terms, what he's saying is this. There is a benefit to being wise. And the illustration he uses, or the situation he points to, is the situation of being in the presence of a king who has absolute authority. Then if you understand that situation, if you understand the time and the appropriateness of what to do, then to your great advantage, it'll produce a smile on your face, it'll prompt obedience, it'll promote loyalty, and prevent you from being harmed. Now, as I said a minute ago, we don't have a king, so this does not directly apply to us. But we do have those who have authority over us. So, one of the benefits of wisdom is it enables you to do what is appropriate before those who are in authority. The Secretary of State under Franklin Delano Roosevelt said that he made you feel like one of the peasants being called in by the lord of the cattle. You ever had a boss like that? That just made you feel like zero or minus something? Well, it takes great wisdom to know how to handle that situation. If you have wisdom in that situation, then the things I've laid out, the things Solomon has said in this passage, apply. You can have a smile on your face, you can prevent yourself from being harmed, and you will end up being obedient and loyal to that person and his authority, and that's the key to prevent yourself from having your head separated from the rest of your body. So, the point of these verse 9 verses is simply that there is a benefit to wisdom. For example, before somebody in authority. But beginning in verse 10, going down to verse 17, he echoes what he said back in chapter 7, verse 23, namely that there's a limitation to this. Even Solomon said, I do not know everything. Look at verse 17. Then I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man labors to discover it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it. Now he discusses this and then states the point very clearly. This is the point I wish to make today. There is a benefit to being wise, but there's a limitation. And the limitation is, no matter how much you know, no matter how wise you are, you will not know everything. There is a limitation to what wisdom can teach you. Now, what Solomon does in this passage is he gives very specific situations where that is true. So let's go back and pick up at verse 10. He says in verse 10, "Then I saw the wicked buried, who had come and gone from the place of holiness. They were forgotten in the city where they had so done. This also is vanity." What Solomon is talking about in Ecclesiastes chapter 8, verse 10, is simply this, that a wicked person sometimes dies without being punished. Now, that's not evident from verse 10. It becomes evident as you read the rest of the passage. In other words, he's talking about, very simply put, unpunished evil. That's one of those things, he's saying, I don't understand. People who do evil are not always punished, and I don't understand that. In simple terms, that is what he is saying. To complicate that, look at verse 10 again. The wicked are buried, and the implication is, without being caught, that comes later, who went into the holy place. They went to church. In that case, they went to the temple. So he scratches his head and he says, here's this person who was wicked, and they got away with it. They went to church and looked respectable. They went to church and looked like they were holy and righteous. And they died without ever being exposed. He says in verse 10, and then they were forgotten. In other words, it was never revealed what they had done. They died without being exposed. So this is one illustration. There are many in which Solomon says, I just don't get it. Evil should be punished, but sometimes people get away with it. There's an old saying that says crime doesn't pay. Well, that's true. Sometimes. And sometimes it's not. That's why we have cold cases. They were never solved. And some of those cases never get solved. Now, the next verse in this passage is, I think, one of the most intriguing in all of this book of Ecclesiastes. Please look at Ecclesiastes 8:11. Because the sentence against an evil work, now it's going to be very clear what he's been talking about in verse 10, an evil work, and the guy died without being exposed. The sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. Therefore, the heart of the sons of men is fully set on in them to do evil. Now, I want to say two things. It's a very important verse. Number one, he's saying, they didn't get caught early. And because they didn't get caught early, then they thought, hey, I can get away with it. And they simply did more evil. So the first thing I want to say is this. The best thing that can happen to an evildoer is they get caught quick. I have said that to parents who were all torn up because they had a junior high age teenager who did something really wrong and got caught. And my response has been, oh, that's a good thing. Good. Let them step out of line at age 13 and let them really get in trouble. And if they got any sense at all, that'll teach them a lesson. And they will never do that again. I think the worst thing that can happen is that they do something wrong and they don't get caught. So what happens? They walk away and they say, hey, I got away with that. I can do that again. That's the worst thing that can happen to you. Now, there's a second thing I want to say. And the second thing I want to say is this. I think this passage explains why capital punishment doesn't work. I believe the Bible teaches that there should be capital punishment in some cases. I think the Bible is very clear about that. In the Old Testament and in the New Testament, it says God didn't give the sword to government in vain. Well, then why doesn't it work? Why isn't capital punishment a deterrent to crime? Ecclesiastes 8:11, because it's not executed speedily. That's why. Somebody has written, and I quote, endless delays in the trial and punishment of criminals only serves to encourage lawlessness and create contempt for the judicial system. While it is important to guarantee that every defendant has a fair trial, and it is possible to overprotect the criminal at the expense of the victim, fair, impartial justice meted out promptly serves as a deterrent to crime. On the other hand, postponement makes offenders more fixed in their determination to break the law. They reason that they can get away with it, or at least they can get a light sentence. End of quote. The Los Angeles Times reported a couple of years ago that in the state of California, if you were convicted and sentenced to death, you would wait on death row an average of 25 years. And that's why it doesn't work. So in verse 17, when Solomon says, you know, there are things I just don't understand. One of the things I don't understand is how it is that evil doesn't get punished. And then when it doesn't get punished, it just encourages more evil. And that's his point. So, how many students have cheated on a test in school and graduated without being found out? How many shoplifters have never been caught? How many speeders have never gotten a ticket? How many criminals have gotten away with it and their crime was never solved? And to make matters worse, for lack of an immediate judgment, it prompted them to continue in their criminal ways. At any rate, Solomon's point is this. With all the wisdom I have, I don't understand why some people do hideous, wicked things and they get away with it. I just don't understand that. That's his point. There is a second thing he says he does not understand. I'm going to skip down to verse 14. I will come back to verses 12 and 13 in a minute, but I want you to skip down to verse 14. There is a vanity which occurs on the earth, that there are just men to whom it happens according to the work of the wicked. Again, there are wicked men to whom it happens according to the work of the righteous. I said, this also is vanity. Now what he's saying is this. You know, it's bad enough that the wicked don't get punished and that they don't get punished immediately. But what really is a puzzle to me, he says, is that righteous people end up suffering. They end up suffering what the wicked should suffer. And the wicked end up with the result of what the righteous should have. It's the reverse of what should be true. And he's saying in verse 17, as I pointed out, I just don't understand not only the injustices, but the inequities of life. The righteous suffers the consequences of the wicked, and the wicked experience the consequences of the righteous. I want to illustrate this. There are people who smoke, and they're supposed to get cancer, right? And they don't. And there are people who get cancer who never smoked once in their life. I don't get it. My mother smoked, the old way we used to say this is she smoked like a chimney. Matter of fact, when I was 13 years old, my mother said to me, I do not care whether you smoke or not. Just don't do it behind my back. They're on the kitchen table. If you want to smoke, have one. Now, what's a 13-year-old going to do? I had my first cigarette at age somewhere around 13. It was also my last. I got sick as a dog. So I decided, I've never had another one since. I can't stand cigarette smoke. But my mother smoked all her life. And she died when she was 84 years old and never had cancer. And I heard the other day about a 39-year-old that died with cancer who had never smoked a day in his life. I don't get it. How's that? That's not what it's supposed to be. And that is Solomon's point. Now, life is full of this kind of stuff. Things I just don't understand. And that's the point I want to make today. There are things in life I don't understand. Let me give you a simple illustration besides cigarette smoke. There are four lanes on the freeway, or maybe five. Without fail, the one I get into is the slowest. I'm a genius at this. Just like turning on the TV and getting the commercials. I do it all the time. Or there's a noise under the hood of my car, and I beat it to the mechanic. And miraculously, as I pull in, it goes away. And he looks at me like I'm crazy. I just don't understand. One parent wrote, explaining this mystery of the open-faced peanut butter and jelly sandwich. The parent said, it never falls in the kitchen on the linoleum floor. It always falls in the living room. One wag said that whether it falls face down or face up is directly proportionate to the cost of the carpet. I'm telling you, life is full of mystery. There are things I just don't understand. Now, if you really want to get into this subject, we'll talk about Bigfoot, the Bermuda Triangle, and the Loch Ness Monster. There are just plenty of mysteries in life. So why is it that the wicked people get away with it and the righteous people suffer horrible consequences? I don't get it. That's what Solomon is saying. Why do godly missionaries get martyred rather than murderers? Why is it that an irresponsible drunk person hits another car head-on, killing the whole family, and the drunk person walks away without a scratch? Why is it that the mafia gets rich on illegal drugs, selling illegal drugs and prostitution, while hardworking people barely make ends meet? Do the inequities of life ever bother you? Do the injustices of life ever bother you? Let me say it another way. Are you breathing with your eyes open? Well, that's the very issue Solomon is dealing with in this passage. On October the 1st, 1939, in a radio address, Winston Churchill used the phrase, "A riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma." Baffled and bewildered by the surprising decisions of the Soviets, Churchill explained in utter frustration, and I quote him now, "It is a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma." His full statement was, "I cannot forecast to you the action of Russia. It is a riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. But perhaps there is a key, the key to Russia's national interest." What a phrase. What a phrase. A riddle wrapped in a mystery inside an enigma. That's life. That's life. That's life. And that is what Solomon is talking about in this passage. And it gets worse. Look at verse 16. "Then I applied my heart to know wisdom." I know what? I'm going to solve these kind of things. I'm going to study wisdom. I'm going to get wisdom. "So I applied my heart to know wisdom and to see the business that is done on the earth, even though one sees no sleep day or night." I'm going to work 24/7. 365 days a year. I'm going to figure all this out. "Then," verse 17, "I saw all the work of God, that a man cannot find out the work that is done under the sun. For though a man's labor is discovered it, yet he will not find it. Moreover, though a wise man attempts to know it, he will not be able to find it." In other words, you're never going to figure it out. All right. So what's the point? Well, there's several. So let me lay them out very clearly. I think the first point is, I've said several times now as I've been explaining the book of Ecclesiastes, that one of the points Solomon is trying to make is you need to be a realist. You need to look reality in the eye. You really do. Part of being a realist, part of looking at reality, is to throw up your hands and say, "I don't know everything. Not only do I not know everything, I cannot know everything this side of heaven, and I'm not sure I'm going to be as wise as God when I get to heaven." You just don't know. And that's the point he's making. But there's several other things he said. I skip verses 12 and 13. Go back to verse 12. "Though a sinner does evil 100 times and his days are prolonged," that's the whole point he was making earlier, the guy sins and he dies without getting caught, and he lives, he does it over and over again, 100 times. Yet I surely know that it will be with him, with those who fear God, who fear before him. But it will not be well with the wicked, nor will it be prolong his days, for which are a shadow, because he does not fear before God. So what's his point? His point is simply this. You need to fear God. That is, if you put God in the formula, then all of a sudden you can at least live with it. And here's the point of these two verses. The point is that God's going to take care of it eventually. There's going to be a judgment. And injustices are going to be judged. Inequities are going to be addressed. So, if I include the Lord, then I can relax. And I can say, all right, Lord, I'm going to trust you to take care of it. There's a second thing he says, verse 15. So I commended enjoyment, because a man has nothing better under the sun than to eat, drink, and be merry. For this will remain with him in his labors all the days of his life, which God has given him under the sun. So here's the point. Trust the Lord with all those things you don't understand. Did you hear that? Should I repeat that?
Yes, please. Yes.
Write that down. Trust the Lord with all those things you don't understand. And in the meantime, go get a hot dog. Eat, drink, and be merry. Enjoy the hot dog. You know, life is tough. You agree with that? Life is tough and life is difficult. Life is not a beach and life is not a party. It's tough. And the older you get, the tougher it gets, because you got to account for all those kids. Worry about them. And then your body starts failing you. Life gets tough. So what do? You learn to enjoy the simple things of life. That's what you do. Like a good meal. I enjoy groceries. I enjoy eating a good meal. But every once in a while, what is exceptionally good is sometimes there's an exceptional meal or exceptional company with the meal. What is more enjoyable than having a good meal and enjoying it with somebody that you really enjoy communicating with? What's more enjoyable than that? Nothing. All right. The point is that you can't understand everything in life, but what you can do is trust the Lord with it and enjoy life, the simple things of life, even in the face of perplexities and mysteries. What a great truth. What a great truth. So let me sum all this up. I really think this is an important truth. And I say that as a pastor who's counseled with people who struggle with this kind of stuff. The sum is simple. Wisdom has value because it can teach you how to live an appropriate life in certain situations. But wisdom is limited because it cannot explain everything. So in that situation, all you can do is trust the Lord with those things you cannot understand and enjoy the simple things of life in the meantime. Yesterday we had the men's breakfast, and I said to them, I need some help with the sermon tomorrow. What are things you don't understand? And we had a nice little interesting discussion. We came up with a little list, and some of what I'm about to tell you is on their list. What happens that you don't understand, that bothers you? That's the issue. What happens when people unexpectedly lose a mate? or when parents lose a young child. Boy, that one really tears people up. Or when people survive and others were killed. Or when you rear a child the right way and he goes the wrong way. Or a friend commits suicide. I've had that happen twice in my life. Or when you experience years of unanswered prayer. I remember praying and fasting for something years ago, and it never did happen. The reverse happened. I say to you, one of the realities of life, and there are things we just don't understand. Now, here's the problem. How you respond to that affects you. So how do you respond to the raw reality of the futility of life? When the reality of life hits, some people are driven not just to disappointment, but to disillusionment. Not just to a few drinks, but to drunkenness and drugs and depression and divorce. And in some cases, all of the above. And then they become angry and bitter and cynical. So I think it is imperative that you understand that nobody understands it all. Not even Solomon. Some people, I think, unconsciously assume that if they just get close enough to God, God will reveal it to them. Well, let me tell you, as a pastor who has spent decades studying the Bible verse by verse, he just doesn't tell us, folks. He just doesn't tell us. There are things he does not reveal to us. I think there are some people who just give up. They don't necessarily get angry. They just quit. Somebody wrote a poem that said, "Lord, I'm drowning in the sea of perplexity. Waves of confusion crush over me. I am too weak to shout for help. Either quiet the waves or lift me above them. It is too late to learn to swim." No, it's not. It's never too late to learn to swim. So through all the miseries and mysteries of life, what you need to learn to do is trust the Lord and trust His word. Remember, as I said last time, faith doesn't bury itself in the sand. Faith faces facts. So look the raw reality of life in the face. You cannot explain it. You cannot change it. Just remember that. And recognize that God doesn't give you all the answers. But you can rejoice in the simple things of life. Man, I think this is so important. And I think it's important because of the people I've counseled with over the years who bumped up against something they couldn't understand and it drove them to the edge of despair. Certainly the edge of distraction spiritually. So I cannot emphasize enough, you've got to face reality and recognize God does not explain everything to us in this life. Maybe that's because He wants to teach us to trust Him. Because if we had all the answers, we wouldn't need to trust Him. So, Andre Crouch, a pastor who was a songwriter, wrote some incredible songs, some very popular songs, who went to be with the Lord this week, wrote one of my favorite songs. It's called Through It All. It goes like this. I've had many tears and sorrows. I've had questions for tomorrow. There have been times when I didn't know right from wrong. But in every situation, God gives blessed consolation that my trials come only to make me strong. I've been lots of places. I've seen lots of faces. There have been times I felt so all alone. But in my lonely hours, yes, those precious lonely hours, Jesus let me know that I was his own. I thank God for the mountains, and I thank him for the valleys. I thank him for the storms that brought me through. For in it, I've never had a problem. If I'd never had a problem, I wouldn't know that he could solve them. I'd never know what faith in God can do. Through it all, oh, I've learned to trust in Jesus. I've learned to trust in God. Through it all, I've learned to depend upon his word. Let's pray. Father, thank you for the assurance that even when we don't understand, that when we're in the dark, there's light in your word. And even when that doesn't explain everything, we can trust you for the grace to carry on, even when we don't understand. Lord, teach us this lesson, that we not fret and fear, but that we learn to trust you. In Jesus' name, amen.